Yes, Chair, we are ready. And I was just asking, can everyone hear me on the other side? I know there's a very strong sound of the air conditioning.
Yeah,
yes. Maybe what I can do is I can stand over in the middle or something, and then we can have a presentation. A pointer. I can use a pointer and stand in the middle rather than over here. I have training in that.
You remember that?
What I'm going to do is just give some highlights from the annual report and then just go through some of the indicators relating to the shareholders' compact that we have with the minister. The board has the next board has the minister and explain where we met the target, where we over-delivered and where contracts didn't meet them. Just explain to the committee for the progress on its way over the past year and leading as much time to questions as we can. Snapshot of the RPR Election Board, which is chaired by Lani Pinchot. The board meeting on the 1st of November. Returning members of the board are Julius Lani and Wilson Gerasa. Wilson is our representative on the Board of Governors of KIA. This is a demographic snapshot of the Nexa Group. This, of course, doesn't cover everything. We have a foreign equity report that was presented to the Department of Labor a few years ago, which covers what we require to report on legally. But I have to go back in the past to what Nexa was. I remember visiting Nexa in 1990. Former Minister Larry Hoover, who wrote in the then Shell House in the AMC Science and Technology Group. At that point in time, Nexa was time white. More people were there and they were white speaking. That was what it came from. And so I think some of these figures in that light. We have 38 senior managers, 18 black, 8 of those women. 34% of the engineers are black, 24% of women, 39% of scientists are black, 29% of women. And we're a level 3 triple D distributor in terms of the responsible labor criteria. Highest in 1, the lowest in 7. Again, we've got a graphic problem here. So if you just turn over on the sheet there. This is a description of the safety campaign. You can see the blue graph there, I'm still remembering our responsibility funding. The blue graph there, the number of people assessed in the workforce making safety observations. Okay, in other words, we have a program where it's not a future safety, general safety. So that if I'm driving along using my cell phone,
behavior-based safety it will be demonstrated to be working this year. Can you go on the next one? So, having
given those two snapshots, what I'm going to do is explain very briefly the connection to your mandate. It's also the mandate in terms of the policy approved by the cabinet on 28th of May. Some key highlights for the year.
Thank you.
raise money to help design commercial buildings. So when we decide that the technology we've created is mature enough to be industrialized, we then create a white company to do that work, as opposed to creating a safe, subsidized business. So, during the past year, we became number one in the world in terms of corruption of radioisotopes. So, how did that happen? Well, we crept up from position 2 to position 4 to position 2 over the last 3 years. We were number 2, and then the largest producer in the world had a problem, a hole in their reactor. Suddenly, their nuclear reactor was shut down. We became number one. What would you say to the product and market of that now? We also therefore played a key role in alleviating the global supply crisis. In this particular isotope, molybdenum 99, is used in medical imaging. In other words, it's a high level substitute for other imaging systems such as CAT scanning, X-rays, and so on. There is much more information. So, when the Canadians set up the market earlier this year, in the United States, from almost all of the supply to Canada, suddenly the biggest market in the world no longer was able to deliver certain level of healthcare. So we were coming and we started that market. Obviously, we couldn't tell all of it. But we've done very well at Nexus in South Africa. Our image, I think, is a technology capable country. Nexus group performance. I don't see the documents in front of you. You can see how we've increased our turnover over the past 3 years. Sales have risen from 430 odd up to over 600 million rand. But the state, let's not forget that, the state has come to the party by putting more money for the reduction. So what we done in the market, the state has also done in terms of giving us an increased grant for certain work that they want done, the decommissioning of historic facilities, but also research and development. This gives you a graph of the isotope sales by entity over the past year, and then the time period going back to 2000. You can see that the rise in the sales of the isotopes has been fairly meteoric. We're up to 350 million rand in the last year. And what I can state almost categorically is that next year's bar, 2009-10, is going to be up here somewhere. I predict at least 500 million. So, now we can come down together. At this stage, we are really managing to cash in on investments in technology made by government. The question often asked by National Treasury is, all of this money moves into R&D. What happens with the various graphs? And it's like a bottom of the pit. So this is an example of what can happen, and I'm telling you, the entity is a taxpaying entity. In other words, no money from the state now goes into the system. The money goes back to the state. Money goes back to the capitalize research and development from the dividend moving to payment. So to me it's a success story of an R&D investment by government, which is not very good. Let me just describe this business.
What is it? And I've done this before in years gone by, but I'm aware that this
things have changed and there's no change. So let me explain to you how we agitate. So I'll show you a picture of the reactor next month on stage group following stage one of the picture of the reactor. One further on from that. Yeah. The research reactor at Terranova, the next slide, it's not a power reactor. There's no turbine. It's a producer. It's extensive producer of neutrons. From the reaction of uranium in the core of the reactor, those neutrons can either be used for research purposes or they can be used to produce the radioisotopes. The way that you produce them is you put what's called target plate, snap and plate, into the core of the reactor for 2 days or so, and then push them out. You dissolve them in a very caustic solution, purify the resulting solution, and you have something called molybdenum 99, a very valuable chemical. The one snag about the molybdenum is it disappears in 3 days. Or half of it disappears, you know, what we call it, a half-life of just less than 3 days. What does that mean? What it means is that if you start with 1 gram of it, after nearly 3 days, you have half a gram. And a couple of reasons for this is for the code. It means that it's paved away. In practical terms, that means that in less than 3 days, half of your money is gone. So, what we do is, as quickly as possible, we take the isotopes out of the reactor, we put it in that container there, and that container is licensed to be transported to 55 countries. Put it in an airplane and fly it off to whoever wants it. You can't store the stuff because it goes. So, you know, somebody in, you know, Istanbul or New York or whatever decides to go out early on a Friday and leave your container in a hangar over the weekend and you're very upset because half of your money is gone away. So, a high-tech technical logistics system. Some more highlights. We, during the year, converted our reactor to burn so-called low-enriched uranium. The government asked us to do this because we are not enriching uranium currently. And you cannot buy high-enriched uranium on the world market, which is what we need to make ready. So, the business is only sustainable if you use low enriched uranium. We also, in terms of global protect, safeguard nuclear style material, because it can be used for weapons, there's a general movement towards low enriched uranium. Process. So, before we align with that, within the next year, that interest and be able to use that. And the criteria for staying in a certain country to push out for liberation. So those countries should be able to buy our product. Okay, John, that's buy our product. Join more countries now, please. I don't want to appear as someone in a soapbox or at a rally or something. Yeah. Yeah. We also spent over 7% of our staff budget on training this year. Our target was a small percent. We also launched the Nuclear Science Center project. We talked about the development role of NEXA. Idea of a design education, nutrition, learning facilities, a range of stakeholders from the public to learners and schools. What are we going to do then? We're going to have an exhibition on energy, nuclear science, reactors, radiation, waste, and then also the temporary exhibition space, cooling exhibition, so on, from countries, from whoever wants to use that space. As long as they fit in with our basic wants. So, I'm going to be reporting now on the indicators in what are roughly three core clusters. Where we divide our indicators. We get power, which is uranium conversion, enrichment, fuel fabrication, etc., manufacturing, and then radiation products, radiation time, radiation quarry operation, production, supply of radiochemical services. Those areas are somewhat stable. On one page, using technology, power, and fuel, which are power reactors. And then, secondly, using the radiation from the reactor for various research and industrial purposes. And then, we also play the role of hosting nuclear programs. In other words, we have a safety, security, safeguard. We have PDR on site, getting a company called Final, and an enrichment company on site. So we play the role of hosting nuclear activities, which is not directly necessarily originating in the activity, we play the role of hosting those facilities. The nuclear power plant, the performance would be, in terms of the nuclear part, we find the problem of energy and the results by talent. We reply to the research report. In this year, I hope to finish it last year, 85% of the work. I think we've almost got there. I held back one of the reports for a while, and we're about to send it to the minister. We're more as a target in terms of the schedule of work which came from that policy. The manufacturing center, we had a target to have a turnover of 35 million rand in that center. We didn't get there. And the main reason we didn't get there was because the CMR project changed. We had predicted that we get work. The system level from CMR. CMR capsule centers, and so we didn't make that target. It's going to reflect, we did reflect on the next bottom line for the manufacturing center for that year. We're not going to improve that. It's really completed. As you can see from the bottom line of the whole group, we have a strong respect for that. Lack of meeting that target in other ways. Also, this is affected by Eskimo's disposal of the media one to some extent, but I think less by that than by PDMR. We were able to make the Safari reactor fully available. There were no unscheduled shutdowns at all. Obviously, there are shutdowns for maintenance purposes, for refueling, etc. There were no unscheduled shutdowns. In terms of the commercial target for radioisotope production, the NPP group as a whole, the target was 230 million rand for the whole group. We actually made 422 million. In fact, over the NSF target, and the exceeded target by 92 million rand. And then you might ask, how did we do that in a recession? Well, it's simple. If you have a market which is largely healthcare is not affected by a recession, and many banks will fail. So, you know, thinking of debt healthcare is not a bad bet. And then we might need to be extended to the recession and then to the other side. That's right. You're busy building up in terms of all of the regulatory compliance and set the target as we go forward. Each year we set the target in terms of producing check documents to send to the regulators, check safety, health, environment, and quality, so that the regulator approval to build up our set of compliance documents for our check system, and met that target last year. Also in terms of work-related injuries, DIIR stands for disabling injury rate. There's a complicated mathematical formula depending on the size of the company, and we aim to get to be less than one. For last year, we maybe just made it. We got to 0.89. So the only way to take this is work contract. National key point security event. We don't ever want any such event to happen. Have happened and make their part. So far, there cannot be anything other than zero in that case. We didn't have such an event last year, so we're very, very proud. It shouldn't happen anyway, but it's something we can kind of a deal breaker as well as we can. Next is what I mean by a national key point. Next is listed because of the National Security Act. The National Security Act, some of the other things are some parts of the arm, the health, the tuberculosis, etc. We have an annual site refurbishment plan, and we aim to finish 80% of that plan, which is in general defined over the NTF, and we in fact managed to complete all of the two targets in this year, for last year. One of the reasons for having Nexa is to reduce population, which translates our own core business improvements, or patterns which have been put out into the market. Our target for last year was four. We counted seven of those. Some examples are given in the annual report. They range from the use of citizen isotopes, from the bone pain and amputation, extraction of venom from venom cylinders and using that. Looking at extracting uranium from the old filters used in the old enrichment plant, developing a technology to get all the uranium back from those filters. So, when it comes up to 7, we can have to find a little more difference. Of course, you know, if you look at the product of research in various ways, you can say you can count publication. In other words, research publication in the National Research Journal. Counts patents, or you can look at real innovations when we try to do more treatment. In terms of referee scientific publications, we had a target of 0.4 per researcher last year. We didn't quite make that target, and this is an area I want to be happy with. I think that the standards have been more better than that. We should be more passionate delivering about one paper for researcher per 100. Of course, it's a global standard, and you know, I think the reason for underperformance there is the fact that the next research is very much geared towards commercial processes in India. There was a study to make money for hospitals. That's our great point from one of the basics to developing growth in fundamental research. And you know, we might get the research work was back towards that goal, but it takes time. It takes recapitalizing the workforce, getting the people, upgrading our infrastructure. We had a target of 7 million. Over 4 million applicants have brought us up from the Department of Science and Technology as well as including research and instruction. The other one is target we didn't achieve. Two targets here. Essentially, the technical staff members. On total staff, we want to increase the number of roles. So, there's time for the workforce. Difficult at the moment is to do the high attrition rate. We can't say there wasn't a better amount. When you employ 10 engineers, and you find that you can set them during the year. You go to so the high turnover in the sector is generally a problem in terms of the position of high-level scientific and engineering skills. So you can have a lot of higher presence than we can expect. So we haven't had that problem. I told you we're retaining problems. Next to this. I was here for the first time in 1990, 100% white. My aim was to have, at the end of the last year, 44% of the staff, of the technical staff, that's engineers, radiation protection officers, scientists, and black students, make that made it over 14%. And then I said to you that the training budget. My target was to spend 4.5% of training in the United States of America. Some of the budget is in London. You have a staff budget, and then as a result of savings, you can use one people leaving, you have money left over, and instead of putting them on fire and hiring them, you can put that into training. So, I thought I'd use my time for questions. Thank you very much for the privilege of presenting that. So I hope I've managed to raise on to invite you to your next presentation that you can have as a part here. So thanks very much. I can go back to my seat while I can ask you some more.
Okay.
And
is the art of religion, are you able to think of the art necessary, you know, for them to be able to act on the relationship of government? And the other aspect if you learn anything from the Caribbean Chalk River project or the company from Canada, on the things that they have done, that then they will close down. That should make you, that in the near future, you won't find yourself being trampled by us, coming to explain or having to be in the very same immaturity as the other certain company. I just want to check whether the medicine is available for that. I just want to check the issue of the profit. What is your view in terms of the issues of the economy? What is your view? Do you think the American government can actually deal with them?
Thank you. First of all, I think I should just say that we want to be really grateful for the way that this girl and girls from Zambia has had a great change, because normally with government business, but the railway is from, you never get that control point. So we'd be grateful for that. The other one is some businesses see this problem because they spend a lot of money trading and then society comes and takes it away. And then they can afford to spend it more because they haven't spent a lot of money on trading. Is there anything that will help people? The one that I want to ask, I missed the August meeting that they had, the modular reactor. Where are we at this point in time? Thank you. what are the things that we think about. That's all for me for now. I was saying on page 4 of the annual report, there is reference to government extended opinion in assisting in the prosecution of families there, and I just wanted to know what the effect was with regard to whether South Africa was involved. My next question is on page 50 of the report. Employment. I'm curious to know how this drive to bring back old expertise, which indeed you refer to as being partly responsible for the increase in staffing, how successful has that been, trying to bring all these different expertise who may have been lost to the company or to the industry. And the third question, which I thought would be the last, is on the back page, 172 of the report, and it has to do with fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And I'm curious about the 104,000 that the company has to pay because of late payments to staff. I mean, for a company that gets money from the government, why should you give money to the government? What are you doing to make sure that the payments are done in time? Thanks, Jen.
I can answer, okay. Here we are. Okay, I'll do my best in terms of responding to the rather deep set of questions that have been put to me. The first one with the table staff, obviously in terms of our employment equity plan, we have to report on the employment of the table staff as does every other South African company, and we do that. In terms of the numbers that we actually employ, we look, for example, at particular categories of employment. For example, telephone operators, and particularly in the security area, you find that some tasks able people do much better differently able people do those tasks much better than others. Now, for example, we have banks and banks of monitors in the security control center. And for most of us, spending 3 hours looking at those monitors is a terrible kind of task. Now, I for one, would be a failure at it, because I would be walking around and getting agitated and so on. But you find that people who are in wheelchairs, their whole mental focus, they've trained themselves to necessity to be able to do that kind of task. They've prepared themselves for that kind of task much better. And so, you know, those types of tasks we looked at putting the table South Africans into. It depends on the disability. There's some areas where it would be quite difficult to bring disabled skills into. For example, reactor operators and so on. To do that would require significant changes to the reactor and the control system. Those changes would have to be licensed by the regulator. So it's not that easy to make it completely disabled friendly as the workplace. But just to sum up, we report in terms of employment equity reporting, and we try to be creative in terms of finding positions for disabled South Africans. The Canadian reactor, what did we learn? Well, on the key learning point there is that with a reactor that is aging, maintenance inspections are absolutely critical. And I believe that that wasn't done in Canada to a sufficient extent. In other words, regular maintenance inspections, a reactor that is 1 year old will behave differently from a reactor that's 20 years old, etc., etc. Of course, the reactor that we run is a different design, and so you cannot take everything from the Canadian experience and then generalize it to our reactor. But I think the key take-home message is to never compromise on safety inspections. In terms of the power mix, is nuclear affordable? I think the lesson is that if you look at a nuclear power plant over its lifetime of 40 years, it is affordable because you pay a lot in the beginning for capital costs, but the operating costs are very low. This is different from gas, say, where the original capital cost is quite low, but the plant is expensive to operate. And so one has to, I think, have a different approach to the financing. At the moment, it's hard to get a bank to be a partner for a 40-year project. They want their money back much sooner. That's where government can come in with some form of financing or guarantees, etc. Also, other utilities. You might find a French utility or a Russian utility, American utility, that understand that eventually they will get a return. They've got deep pockets because they've been getting money back from their own consumers over many years, many decades. So they would come in and co-finance. Of course, there's nothing for nothing. And to do that, they would demand a certain rate of price rise, because otherwise they wouldn't get a return on their investment. And so, you know, two questions here, I think rolled into one. One is nuclear affordable? I think it depends on what time window you look at. If you look at a payback over 5 years, it's not affordable. If you look at a payback over 20 years, yes, it is. And then there is who is going to put the money in, because who is prepared to wait 20 years to get their money back. And that's a particular kind of partner, probably not a bank at this point in time, because the banks have had to adjust and into a very different global climate as compared to what they were in 2 years ago. Issue of staff turnover. Our turnover is not that high. It's about under 5%, but it's high in certain areas. It's high among young people in highly technical areas, which is exactly what people want to keep. The exit rate is a bit lower than past years. Probably a recession is a reason for that. I think it's going to get even lower over the next year or so. But I think one also has to understand that the world's changed. People do move on, but you need to have a rate of replenishment. You need to train, you need to have bursars. You know, to have an attrition rate of 10%, that means that the average person stays in their job 10 years. Now, staying in their job 10 years nowadays is a long time. So, even if it's 5 years, that means your attrition rate is 20%. Now, you might say that's very high. You need 20% of your workforce every year. I think the modern world, I expect that my kids will change jobs or even change careers 5 times in their lives. And, you know, to lament this thing is the wrong strategy. You need to actually plan for it, I think. The PBMR, you know, I would really prefer to leave those questions to the PBMR management, but from the Nexus side, we are assisting with the PBMR fuel plant, with all the research around the fuel area, and we have conversations in terms of joint projects in manufacturing. The project as a whole, I think, is an area of discussion between the Minister of Public Enterprises and the rest of the government. But at this stage, in Nexa, we are certainly contributing towards the development and extension of the fuel laboratories at PBMR. You see, the training budget, you know, as I said in my presentation, we trained more than we planned to do last year, and the reason for that was that we took some of the money for vacancies. We could have put it into bonuses and so on, but we did also look at increasing salaries, but we thought that it would be a good investment as well to take some of that money and put it into training. So it wasn't money that we took from other operational areas, it was money that had been budgeted to staff. The salary budget was a bit lower because we lost some people, so we took the money that we were going to spend on the salaries and put it into training. So we didn't overrun the budget. We took from one part of the staff budget and put it into another area. The relationship with the regulator, I think, is a very good and constructive relationship. There are regular meetings. For example, I was in the chief regulator's office, Pakistan's office, last week. We have quarterly meetings at the chief executive level. We also have ongoing meetings between staff at different levels of the organization. So, at this stage, I mean, I've certainly seen big improvements in the delivery with respect to Nexa by the regulator, and we're really very pleased to see that, and we hope that that constructive partnership continues. Issue of acting safeguard manager, that manager has now been appointed. The reason that the vacancy existed was the promotion of the former safeguard manager to a higher level in the organization. We've now filled that position, and there is a manager responsible for safeguards. Staff retention strategy plans. There are a number of measures we employ here, and one of them was looking at where we were losing staff. We were losing technical staff. We decided then that the next policy is to pay generally at the median of the job band. In other words, for a particular job, the average may be somewhere between 350,000 a year and 550,000. Our policy is to pay in the middle of that. But in certain technical positions, we move that up to a higher level to retain those technical staff. It was not a popular move amongst the organization generally, because there were finance people, lawyers, etc., who didn't like it. But again, we had to motivate them. It was a measure to be employed. Of course, people don't only work for money, they work for other reasons, and one of the ways to keep people to have exciting work environment and exciting projects. And I think that the whole buzz around the rejuvenation of nuclear in South Africa did a lot towards stop the tension. There have been some wobblies on that with the postponement of Nuclear One. I think I see some challenges, you know, if there's no nuclear build happening in South Africa, of retaining staff and skills, because young people in particular move towards areas to make careers for themselves. So if it looks like it's happening in telecoms, they'll go to telecoms. If it looks like it's happening in construction for the car train and others, they'll go there. You know, so they go not just where the money is, but where the excitement is. And for a while we were able to generate that excitement in nuclear. I still hope that we'll continue to be able to do that. But, you know, if the ESCOM program doesn't move forward, I see some challenges in maintaining that momentum. The case where the Nexus staff were used to provide information which led to successful prosecution of a proliferator, that was the so-called Bitter and Geiger case. Swiss and German nationals. The case revolved around the prosecution of these two gentlemen for the design and unsuccessful construction of an enrichment plant which was to be used for illicit purposes in an international environment, and South Africa, I think, can be proud of the role that he played. He got, to some extent, criticized in the media for, not next year, but South Africa as a whole was criticized for it. I see it as a triumph.
Yeah.
Because for the first time in history, a nuclear proliferator has been brought to book. And what happened originally is that these two accused were saying, no, this equipment was to be used for an entirely different purpose. And our witnesses came in and said, no, actually that's an enrichment plant. Those drawings don't relate to what you say they relate to that person. And so they were used there as expert witnesses in that case.
Thank you.
Bringing back former staff, you know, one way we're able to reach those staff is that they're all pensioners of ours. And so we go through the list of pensioners and we look at, we have our own staff in the Human Resources Department sector, who know what those expertises were. And so we're able to approach them and say, well, you know, you're 65 years old now, or 70 years old, but you can still contribute a lot in training, and would you like to come back on a 6-month contract to train young Nexus staff in the following areas? And in general, they've been very receptive to that. The issue of fruitless expenditure and late tax returns. My chief financial officer can come in here and ask her to in a minute, but that related to, unfortunately, a change of management that meant the resignation of a particular staff member who had claimed that certain tasks had been carried out, whereas in fact they were not carried out. That person left without completing certain tasks. So that's regrettably what that relates to. On the issue of Nexa being a taxpaying entity, period, there are discussions going on between ourselves and SARS on that matter. The question you ask, you know, you take money from the state and pay it back to the state, does that make sense? Whether it makes sense or not, if you're a Schedule 2 public entity in terms of the PSMA, that's what it means. In the next legislation, we're looking at certain clauses which we think may trump that. But at this stage, we are expected to be a taxpaying entity. Machine, I don't know if you want to say anything more. You're happy with that, right?
That's a good one.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more, and I will admit that what happened there was a system failure, which came about as a result of the resignation of someone who claimed to have done certain things which were not done. covered that. I'm not sure if there's any question that I haven't answered. In response to that, let me list a few things. Science Week, which is the week usually in May, but it was later this year because of the election, is run by the Department of Science and Technology. But NESTA plays a very active role during that week, both in terms of national science awareness, but also nuclear technology. We have open days for school children. Several hundred or even more a day come to, about average of 600 a day apparently we hear this year. 3,000 school children for a week, 600 a day came to listen to talks and demonstrations on nuclear technology. We have an active corporate social investment program. We have adopting schools in the area. Here is a school teaching program in Attridgeville over weekends. Also in the Northern Cape at the waste disposal facility, we're active in communities there. But in terms of national campaigns, we haven't embarked on any which are separate from what the Department of Science and Technology does in Science Week. We fit it in with that. We haven't run a national nuclear awareness campaign, partly because of budget reasons. I know there's a biotech campaign which the Department of Science and Technology funds, and that's at the level of 10 million rand a year. What we've done is start off with the Nuclear Science Center here, so at Pelindaba, and we will be building on that. But it's a question of standing back and saying what makes a difference. You know, we obviously have such outreach as part of environmental impact assessment applications and so on. But in terms of broad national campaigns, at this stage what we've done is assist the National Department of Science and Technology during their campaign for general science awareness.
Okay,
but
I think we
I can hear you. Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I came really with a specific goal to report on the year, and maybe I interpreted my brief a little narrowly. Where do we go from here? You know, a lot of that depends on what happens with Esther. You know, next to, if the Eskom new build goes ahead, we'll become an extremely important player. We will be, the policy says we are the anchor of research and development in the country, in the nuclear area. We'll also be the anchor, I believe, of manufacturing localization. You'll see a movement of the PDMR designing staff next to manufacturing staff towards creating that localization capability. But if nothing happens in nuclear one, we have to have a different strategy. So, you know, I have this problem also with my own staff. So, Rob, where are we going now? And I said to them, you know, this is where I believe we're going, because I think that those things are going to happen. But if they don't happen, then one has to do something else. So if I were to put forward a five-year blueprint, and you kept it in your filing cabinet, and I came back next year and you said to me, well, didn't you say last year you would do X, Y, Z, and you actually didn't do that? We're in that position where we depend to a significant extent on what happened at that decision-making level. If there's a decision to slow down the nuclear bills for further, we would have to have a different approach, for example, towards uranium enrichment. We would have to base our program not so much on the needs of Eskom, but on uranium beneficiation arguments. You then come in with a different set of partners. You go with mining companies as opposed to power companies. So we are kind of at a crossroads in that respect, you know, from a strategic point of view. And for me to make certain, to make pronouncements, I think would be not irresponsible, is maybe too strong a term, but not helpful. What I'm saying to you is that there are certain choices which are being made which are not entirely within my grasp.
Okay. I think I'm sure that the way forward is that we think the energy is for the nuclear is the one that is the way. So in that, I think we need us to do something with the community level, so that we give the energy and the system effect to maximize given the task or the money that you are doing. So we will ensure
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
By collectively directing the affairs of the NNR, while also looking after the interests of stakeholders, including particularly of the executive authority. And to this end, the board has endeavored to ensure that the NNR complies with the obligations imposed on it by various laws and regulations that are applicable to the NNR. For the current period, the reporting period, the board comprised of one executive member and 12 non-executive members who were appointed by the Minister of Minerals and Energy. I will introduce my team, which is made up of the ex-CEO, Mr. D. Jackson, the Chief Financial Officer, Ramasela Mloto, and the executive responsible for strategy, Joe Mwato. I think the ex-CEO will give an overview of the performance at the target and highlight those key challenges that will be carried forward. Over to you, Dee.
Thank you, Mr. Dee. And thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to interact with the public community. This is quite an important interaction. First, present our report, one. And the other one, we would like to engage further from sharing the report that the activities of the National Nuclear Regulatory Center are presented on our discussion on a regular basis with the manager. So thank you very much for the opportunity. In terms of the presentation of annual report, I will give a brief introduction, what is our mandate, an overview of the facilities that we are regulating in the country. There's no combination, quite a lot of other things. The status of our employment equity, some of us, our NNR scorecard, some of our performance, our financial performance challenges of the country. Okay, in terms of the introduction to this presentation, looking at, again, the NNR mandate, overview of the strategy of the strategies, key highlights, performance against our strategic objectives, summary of our financial statements, as I indicated earlier on, and challenging experience, and progress made to the investigation and action statement. And these sort of strategic objectives outlined on this program are based on the actual strategy plan 2009-11 cycle, which was approved by the NNR board and by the former Minister of Minerals and Energy, now the Minister of Energy as the organization. Okay, in terms of who we are, what is our mandate, the NNR is established by an act of parliament. Independent statutory institution. We report to the conversation you got between the dean and the minister of education. And the act, the legislation that actually governed our existence, the National Religious Society, number 27 of 1999. You heard the CEO of LECA, Mr. Adams, talking about the actual Act number 26 of 1999. And there is some connotation between these two acts. The whole situation before was actually regulated under one act before these two acts were promulgated. So the Act number 131 of 1993. And this act did not differentiate much between the actual promulgation of nuclear energy and independent regulatory process. The separation of this act into two acts now is very, very clear that our act establishes a system of a regulatory body independent from the actual industry such as NECA and technology. And it's very important to understand that. That, you know, sometimes but actually, at meet people in the street, they ask, what type of work do you do? They say, well, I work for the National Security Council. Ah, that's next time. No, that's not. But this is the sort of a thing that we need to protect, and I will talk to them as well. Never mind, in our mind, it's very clear in terms of what says in the act, key points, A, B, C, D, E. Our extract from our act, word for word, and the main aim is to provide for the protection of persons, property, and environment against wind and damage by establishing safety standards and regulatory practices and doing all these things that we see under A, B, C, D, E. And I think I'm saying there to provide for what is not the good for understanding. The MNR is not that we want to ensure the safety of workers coming from the administration of the country. The prime responsibility of that, and it's very clear in our regulations and proceeding with the leaders in our act, the prime responsibility for safety rests with the operators and with the authorization of them. And this is in line with international practice as well.
Okay. I think in terms of our organizational structure, Mr. Vicky has talked about the board of directors. Under the board of directors, I think this is going to be small, but we have that in our office. We have a chief executive officer. I am the acting one in that position. Why acting is our previous CEO, term of appointment, this to an end, and he didn't wish to actually renew that, so I've been doing this job for quite some time. And under there, we have basically four executive divisions here. One is a technical division, which is led by the chief technical officer, and this is where the whole work are really the engine of the NR happens here. Then we have a finance division, which is led by the CFO here, Matera Moroto, a human resource division, which is led by the cultural executive manager, not here obviously, and the strategy and stakeholder division headed by our colleague Joe. And we have a legal division. In terms of the reform, the establishment of the division of the four executive committee members was still in progress at the time of the end of the reform. Working with Audrey and doing that stage of the reform. It is now completely achieved. And the actual in terms of race composition, male, female, we have two black men and two black females that are actually composing that executive branch.
Okay, what do we regulate in the country? We are starting to actually regulate the four nuclear ship cycles. What do we say about nuclear ship cycles? From uranium mining, whatever it is in terms of mining and where they are potential radioactive materials better. In terms of the whole fuel conversion, enrichment, fabrication, and then looking at installing that in power reactors, the operation of power reactors,
radioactive waste management for the trees, and also obviously the mining and mineral processing of radioactive materials. Another point is that we regulate the nuclear vessel. What do you mean nuclear vessel is ships? Ships, nuclear vessels that are either propelled by nuclear plant reactors or that transport radioactive materials, such as uranium or nuclear. Now, when these ships need to enter into our water, in our harbor, they need to apply to us and we need to go through the process and they need to be authorized. So any of these facilities that are regulated by the MNR need to be authorized by us. We issue authorization and then we obviously ensure that all these facilities comply with our authorization. One of the biggest areas that we have another authorization. The mining and mineral processing, we have currently 143 authorizations that we are giving. We have obviously 1 meter arsenal for Kugel. The next aspect is about size. There are several nuclear installations that are on top of our that size. Obviously, the most important one being the Safari 1 reactors, which Obanaman talked about, but there are other facilities there. We also regulate, as I said, the next one. National Radioactive Stable Machine, which is situated in Primark in the North UK. The thermal type of nuclear reactor, we don't have a license issue at this stage. We are currently doing a multiple application and a proper one. In terms of nuclear antiquity, myself, whatever, I've been in the NNR, in what they call the Council for Nuclear Safety. And some other things before. But when I joined the NNR in 1989, very much like the CEO of NECA, Dr. Obanaman, indicated this organization was a pitch one. And there were very few black people or scientists or whatever. I'm not too sure about the people that were sleeping in the cold. I think engaging companies to do that, but I'm sure they will work as well. So, look what happened there. In terms of our senior managers, these figures were have indicated before we sort of found out the appointment of the executive managers. They would be basically 50% or 100% black and in terms of black and male and female. The only person that is obviously still to be appointed is the CEO. In terms of departmental management, which is below the senior manager, we have 70% black male and then 10% white male, and that before was really very much different when I joined the organization. Female, I've 10. So, we need to do quite a bit more on the senior side, which is professional, 51% black, and black female, 18% white. And admin triple staff, 19%, and obviously female, 38% more. And allocation for position of staff are raised 45% black male and 23% black male. And by gender, it's still a male domination for the organization, and we are working on that. Okay, thank you. Okay, now I would like now to take you through some of these highlights. The first part is obviously the first question that the regulator was answering to the public, to our stakeholders. What is the actual status of compliance? We have safety requirements, standards, legislative, board requirement document. What is the actual status of the newspapers in the country? And you can read that on your report, in the first bullet or the mark to the other. That means basically what he said is that the NNRI is satisfied with the actual level of administration and legal action in the country. And why we do, why do we say that we have really strict safety standards in terms of exposure to workers and exposure to the public that are being monitored very regularly by the authorization orders such as NECTA, TECO, and all of these, and independently by and we are showing that in our new report that we have, in terms of the safety, our compliance for safety standards, we have no issue there. We are satisfied, but obviously, through constant digital monitoring on that, although the maturity of the authorization of the country, I think the maturity and the approach of the responsibility. However, there is a certain area in the mining industry, and you will understand that the 143 authorization orders, which are all four different, owned by many state mining orders and different managers. And in some areas, we are picking up some what you call non-compliance, not in terms of our safety standards, but in terms of process. And we monitor that we dive in sort of authorization orders to report some directions to take some action. And they are, some of them are indicated in our report. We granted two new permits for life, which is also a question of process, which we go through. But they're very intensive, and they involve two different submarines, one which I know. It was one aircraft carrier from the United States and one Russian ship from Russia. The first bullet there, if one looks back in our annual report and our performance of the previous financial year in 2008, we received a qualified audit for what is the cost of reason. And basically, it was a big program of improvement that was in the organization to address the concerns raised by the auditor general in that for the past financial year. And that really required a lot of effort from our chief financial officer's office. Our management of our property balance. And in some of our current support, we have received unqualified audit, although there are still some issues that we need to go through that. The fourth bullet, Dr. Romaran indicated in the conversion of the Safari 1 reactor. High enriched uranium to low enriched uranium, so I won't go back into so many things. This was not a two-day type of exercise. Both from NECTA and from Africa took a major percentage of our time in terms of our resources to review the solutions that we provided to ourselves in terms of the adequacy system of the safety inside going into. The safety aspect. And after many, many months of discussion with NECTA, our own reviews of our own technical experts, safety assessment inspectors, we approved that, I think, in the whole thing was June. For the progressives of the world. We also looked at an updated regulation on the appointment of chairperson and deputy chairperson to serve on some public safety information forums, public safety information forums, extremely important in terms of public awareness, in terms of
what is happening in facilities such as NR, Hong Kong. The NR hosted an IEA stands for Atomic Acronym, IEA stands for International Atomic Energy Agency. International Atomic Energy Agency is the nuclear branch of the United Nations. And basically, they have a program called the Technical Cooperation Project, which member states like South Africa can participate in. And in terms of one of these Technical Cooperation Projects, the NNR hosted a project on promotion of self-assessment of regulatory infrastructure for nuclear safety, and that was accepted by many regulators, especially from the African continent. And this actually includes new conventions that are within our organization. Okay. Another very important highlight that as a regulator we undertook, not alone, but I think this was initiated not last year, but I think the year before, even the year before. In a minute of speech to the IEA General Conference, that South Africa, through its national nuclear regulator, would initiate the establishment of a forum of nuclear regulatory bodies in Africa, SNRPA. And after quite a few interactions, especially with the Nigerian regulatory body and some of the SADC regulatory bodies like Namibia and so on. This forum was launched in South Africa in March of 2019. That's very good. In terms of some of the IEA activities, in terms of our actions, we are responsible for ensuring that these legal instruments, in terms of convention or are sort of implemented. And there are various conventions that are extremely important in terms of nuclear safety and radiation waste. One of them is a joint convention of the actual management of radioactive waste and the management of statues. And South Africa presented first report, which was presented by the NNR. And that was done in basically during the reporting period, although the report was presented in May. Also, in terms of another convention, which is the Convention on Nuclear Safety, every 3 years, the country has to provide a report of what is the state of nuclear safety in the country. And again, we presented that at this convention. Basically, both these chairs were extremely well received, and there are certain obstacles that the convention prescribes that needs to be complied with, and there is a peer review process among the countries. And on the day of the convention, we always found South Africa, not we as a regulator, but South Africa, is found to be extremely compliant and with the report that they were. Another thing that is quite a major highlight as well is that in some of the IEAs, NNR is actually participating and actively representing all the committees of the IEA some of the agency standards. And they have recognized that South Africa is a country that is with an incredible in terms of the management of these affairs, and that is transpired in the staff of the convention. And the IEA has awarded us, the country, to hold an international conference on regulatory effectiveness, which will be hosted by the NNR of the Office of the Government, regulatory in the NNR. And that would be held in Cape Town in December 2009. Cape Town is the national convention center. And there are major preparations that are being taken place. now, I think in some of the last bullets, maybe we could have put that right on top. But perhaps because we are still quite far away from finishing that. And in some of the national energy policy and strategy that was published in 1998, and Dr. Bobadan mentioned some of his policy programs, there is obviously, when one reads the energy policy strategy, there are some major aspects in there, in some of the embarking on the nuclear expansion program, not only in terms of nuclear generation, but other some of the uranium enrichment and conversion, fabrication of fuel and all these things. And all these activities will need to be authorized and regulated by the ASR, whatever these activities are in the future. So when this nuclear energy policy and strategy was still being developed, we obviously knew some of the elements, and when ESCOM came to us to tell them the expansion of the nuclear power program, and in some of what was said in the national energy policy and strategy, we re-looked at ourselves as a regulator and said to ourselves, are we good enough to actually take this country as a regulator? Are we good enough to respond to the challenge? And the answer was, yes, but, and if you have yes, but, the but come out. And if we have to compare ourselves to the rest of the world, the but, that is where the but comes. What do we do from where we are to be a world of regulators? And we embarked on the program, amongst other things, we embarked on the program to optimize our regulatory and legislative framework to ready position in our ourselves for this innovation to expand the program. And we are talking already that we are quite busy with that. A lot of work that we are doing, looking at international practices and our own operating experience that we have done over the last 6 years. So it's a lot of work in doing that, and I think this is necessary. We have to do that to position ourselves. Okay, so this is where for the highlights in terms of our scorecard. Scorecard, we adopt a principle in measuring our performance of the balanced scorecard. Familiar with this technology. And we are breaking down our sort of the business in four areas: safety and regulation scorecard, stakeholder management scorecard, internal business processing scorecard, and human scorecard. And for each one of those, in the annual report, we report extensively on all the strategic initiatives that we set ourselves, those that we have achieved, and so with those that we have not achieved, and also some of in the annual report is probably where we say NA and NA means that of course not really applicable for that period of the year, although it has to be carried forward for the whole of the year. And I think in some of the presentation that we have, so these four areas are A would be the strategy and regulation. We had 24 strategic initiatives, that's quite a mouthful. We have achieved 10, 8 were not achieved, and 6 were not achieved. And I think in some of the non-achievement, these were, I think, maybe due to soft related issues, but we reoptimized our type of activities to really focus on that. Building stakeholder confidence in South Africa with the regional system. This is the area that has voted the most in actually our scorecard. And the reason for that is, we were very much challenged in this area in terms of the actual premium resources that we have and the services of our stakeholder managers terminated. to another issue for quite some time, and so we were just able to the normal more bank in terms of medium interaction. We're not moving forward into our strategy, but this has now been addressed by my we have strategy, limited strategy manager, stakeholder manager, and we have a proper stakeholder management area as well. I think the area, in terms of improving and strengthening our internal business processes, that we need to put some effort in terms of really looking at the institutional governance, which we find in the previous year, corporate governance. In terms of attracting Europe and retain, it seems that gives a wrong picture. It says that we basically have achieved what we set to achieve, and it doesn't mean that we don't have any further challenges we need to become our future. It doesn't mean that because we have achieved our strategic mission for this year that we can relax that we don't have challenges in the future. I mean, it is even from an area of challenges. In terms of financial performance, we will look into that. This was our operating income. Where do we get our income in the next slide? Our operating expenses for the year. And the next surplus for the year was 444,000. And I think if you want to question this, I think we will be able to take those questions. In terms of our overall total revenue, we get in terms of our authorization fees from owners, which are the mines or whatever, and this is the biggest amount, which is from part of it. And from direct government grants, 20.2 million. The difference is 1 million difference between that number and what we get. That is because in the time that we got some further application of organizations which are based on the hourly rate of the cost of operation with everything. And this is our expenditure, and obviously the biggest expenditure is our choice expenses, and the second biggest service is which basically we have. I won't go to the balance sheet. Okay, challenges. The main challenges that we have experienced in the modern life. And I mentioned retention and attraction of senior personnel. And as I indicated, we set ourselves to specific objectives for this last year, which we have. Achieve, but that doesn't mean that we are all my God and why is that? I think we have increased our remuneration strategy. We are trying to make our organization attractive as well. But one must be mindful of the fact that the actual nuclear material pool in the country is very limited, and it also there's a lot of competition locally and also internationally, huge competition. There are, I think, about maybe 30 reactors in the world that are being planned or under construction around the world. And these countries need some very skilled people. And I can tell you that what is available in the country in terms of skilled personnel. Really, we must really depend on people in the South African industry for what they need. And I'm not talking about the regulators only, but the whole industry. We need to have a major plan to support that. Obviously, we have to do our business from there, and we are looking in terms of production to tell ourselves. We haven't had a lot of of the attrition rate around the year. As mentioned, the recurring of non-compliant demand earlier on, it's obviously something that we need to keep on working on after whatever they said. There is no increasement of our fixed standard outcome. There is no impact another one that is a challenge also in terms of our regulating of regulation is the regulation of development, which is founding industries or whatever around nuclear installation. Our act makes provision for that, and they need to have a regulation control development. We don't say that we should not have any use of that they need to be controlled in such a way that you don't sort of impact the safety of the installation. And now in the process of establishing a capability for the task of the nuclear security management, and that also some aspect that is very actually part of the nuclear energy policy and strategy. And that's also a major aspect in some of the actual international community as well. And you will have seen, I don't know if in our organizational chart, that we have elevated the function which would be looking at both our own nuclear security, of our information, of our buildings, but much more important, the actual security of nuclear security. We are already doing that, but I think we need to strengthen. And stakeholder relationship management, I mean, the example that I've just mentioned earlier on, whereby somebody asked who I've worked for, how did that make that? I think this is indicative of the actual knowledge, the public knowledge of the new being aware of the nuclear energy and all these other things. And as a regulator, we have actually future planning. One of the pillars in our next 2010-2013 strategy plan, which we are further going to, we have identified six pillars of our next strategy, and one of them is that. So this is not going to go on an operational level. One of the pillars of our strategy 2010-2013. Stakeholder population management, public education. And we already doing that. I think in our annual report, we are mentioning some of the things that we've done, and some of awareness. There was a time, unlimited time, sort of a process where we actually had a stamp, whatever you want to call it, where we actually made discovery, aware of what is radiation, what is DNR. But we need to do that much more, but we need to do it in such a way that the public understands that there is an industry, they have certain responsibilities, certain sort of goals, objectives, and to achieve, and there is somebody that is there that is to actually ensure that the public is a watchdog. And this understanding is not open yet. And we really need to remark that, and we are definitely okay. And I think I don't have a nice picture of like Robert of the before dam and all these kind of things. Our offices are in Centurion, the only dam that we have is Centurion Lake. That would not be very good to put anything. Okay, thank you very much. I think I'll go and sit over there and answer some questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe we'll send to our question to Steve Rashon. Just a little thing I've noticed here, I don't know whether it's what regarding safety. In your report on page 41, you see the events and incidents that has to do with farmers. But they don't seem like they are very important to your report. However, when I looked at the other report, before yours, and that's the next report on page 63, environmental performance, no findings were raised. I'm not sure whether it's existing or whether you look something about the safety. Just something that I thought they were contributing for that for my own team.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few things that you are raising. First of all, and you talked about the performance against the objective, where we've got 18 that is not achieved, and we're really not very happy with that. Also, if you look at the, what is the general report, especially in the last part, where you say there's a lack of efficient, effective, and system, and internal control regarding performance management. I think that's something bad that we need to look at very hard. As far as the, what is the general report in the financial statement, I would just like to request you to explain something on the irregular expenditure of 1.9 million. That is something that I would like to know about. Just coming back to the performance, against the objectives is one of them that say you don't have a supply chain management policy. And I think that is totally unacceptable for a company like yourself. There's also a little bit of confusion with me as far as the government ground is concerned. On page 87, it's actually page 20.3 million, but on page 117 and page 92, it's actually page 18 million. If you can just clarify that for me. I'm also worried that the salary during the last year has increased by about 36%. That seems really high for me. And also that the director's enrollment has more than doubled. So it looks like some people are making a lot of money. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. The safety versus the operator, I wasn't quite sure what you were suggesting to begin. The safety versus the operator. The other thing was the recurring non-compliance of miners. What's that? What's the problem there? And then, your independence and the watchdog, are you completely independent or and I was also very interested to know that so much of the employees in the market.
CEO, you just mentioned today, in terms of the gender pay,
FDA, we've made much improvement. But we are intending to ensure that there's that 50-50 in terms of the nation, 69% are our. So, but it must be clear that you are not trying to get rid of white people. It must be clear. Don't ask to consult when they want to get rid of white people and all of that. No. But you want an accessibility and equality. So that it is that balance and the reflection of reality after all. The other concern, I just wanted to check whether you need the professor's test. When you were explaining your organizational structure, you've mentioned that the pillar of the organization is that the technical service and training. So I want to get an challenge to whether you need any consultancy around those aspects. And if yes, what is the main concern? Do you have enough skills or what? And if not, do you have any plan in ensuring that the means you will choose the because consultancy is the most aspect that is consuming more in terms of money that you have. And I believe that if you have internal skills and grooming those ones, be able to save more. But the other thing that I want to check with you whether do you find yourself having challenges in terms of recovering your expenses? You would like to see it right. And I just want to check if whether you manage to if we have those challenges, you have to recover those money or you have got any challenges to recover them. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, sir. Starting with the issue of government grants, we've got what we've got, the normal grant that we get, which was the 20 million, and we had a special grant of about 18 million, which we received a couple of years there. So those are the two different grants. So for the financial year that has been presented here is the 20 million and the 18 million is for the analysis it's actually a large issue for the rehabilitation of the uranium mine. So those are the two things. Coming to an issue of supply chain management policy based on the performance management. NNR has gone through a process of transformation which I think will also, to a point, address the issue of salaries. That it never had a support department. It was run mostly by administrators at a very junior level for a bigger portion of the financial year. And towards the end of the financial year, after the board approved the structure that included the administration program, that's when finance department was now staffed and all the other departments, support-related HR departments. And during that process, we implemented the policies. We do now have a supply chain management policy, but the delay on the performance management was caused because the company didn't have the supply chain management process. They couldn't go on a tender. As a result, that performance of the strategic objective could not be executed. So that addressed the issue around that. On the issue of irregular expenditure, it goes with the same principle. It was at the beginning of the financial year where all the things were not in place. We incurred about 1.9 million on irregular expenditure, which, I mean, by the time the Auditor General came, we went through our exercise to clean up and actually highlighted to them that these are for the first couple of the financial year, the start of the financial year here, these are the issues that we've identified, and these are the measures that we've put in place that going forward we don't have this kind of issue. So this was closing all the gaps that we had, because as it being regarded as a technical organization, there was never a need for strong support department. But I think the board and management took note of that fact that they do need to have that. The director's emolument, the director's fees are diverted. So what we pay, I mean, our directors are the least paid because they pay, that we don't pay a cent more. If National Treasury issues are based on the fees, that's what we pay. And we're having a difficult position here because we want to attract the skill of people that are not knowledgeable. In this, but we cannot even, I mean, one of the assessments that they've gone through is the fee. But, I mean, the fee is not, it does not affect anybody to the NNR. It's more about if you want to be at the NNR and you want to specific. So the director's amendment is just as is. Recovery. Yes, it was a challenge, recovery of debtors on authorization fee, especially on the mines and mineral processing side. But what we did at the beginning of this financial year, we went through all the organizations or most of the mining houses and credit processors and fertilizers to arrange for an advance payment. So we managed to get about 55% to agree to pay the fee as gazetted in advance. In the past, we used to pay on a monthly basis, but that causes a lot of cash flow problem for us and also a lot of bad debt and losing on interest. So we managed to arrange to do that with 55%. They're paying now in advance. So going forward, we're introducing this process that as the fee gets gazetted, if they can pay us, because most of it is about small amount of about 12,000 rands that we have to, you know, recover that over a 12-month period. But the process of receiving money in advance assists us that we now can use the internal staff to focus on other things than debt collection. Homework covered. The salary increase. The salary increase was 36%. NNR used to pay we never used to have a total cost to company principal. And we went through in 2007, there was an exercise of benchmarking of the kind of people that we have internally as to compare to the market. And we look at the trend where we were, and as part of, I mean, one of the issues that we had on the salary survey is why will people leave the entity and say, if I can go to the Eskom of this world because of my qualification, you know, I'd like to be in this industry, but, you know, I still have to pay my bills. So we did a market survey where we benchmark ourselves versus the market, and we move it to more total cost to companies that people can compare like with like, because initially the format, the method of payment was not comparable. So the people were still struggle as to whether this is comparable. That cost the leap. I mean, that cost us to actually compensate them at the industry level, not necessarily at the public sector level, but at the level that when they compare their salaries with Eskom or any of the mining houses, then they can be retained. And we also have a challenge that the kind of skills that we want internally is a higher level of skills than what the actual operator should have. So the kind of technical advice that you provide is not your normal average one. It is, so that attraction of high level skill also comes with the package. So we want to do that. And we also, I mean, as part of building up the whole support structure, that also came with a high cost for the national regulator. So that is the position about salary increase. Thank you. No, just on a skill issue, because just purely because of competition. Because the kind of, like I said, we don't compete with the government department for our skills extension. We're competing with entities. The benchmarking was if we have to pay the level that we will retain because of the survey that indicated that, you know, one of the areas that our salaries are not compatible. We are still a public entity, but we have to benchmark with us a public entity to an extent. I mean, for example, in Eskom, that was one of the areas or companies that we benchmarked ourselves with.
Thank you. I'm very sorry to address the other question. I think the first question was about the event of the lawsuit regarding what is proposed. In our report on page 41, as the member indicated that it's from we reported two legal events that were reported at lawsuit during the reporting and the review. However, none of these represented the legal incident or accident that we found in the end in our right. I think, in speaking, we should be careful that, you know, if you have a nuclear installation, for example, you will find there's a lot of operational events that happen, something goes wrong, and then one needs to, as a future, the stability of it. And in that case, stability is looked at in terms of what is the impact on the workers or the traffic or whatever. There are some criteria that are very clearly defined in our legislation, in our regulation and these sort of things. And whatever we reported as whatever we reported as Walton actually were minor incidents or minor events, less than suitable incidents as a real connotation in our jargon. And they did not actually meet any of these criteria. I'm not so sure about the page 3 of our report they were to mention what may have been the nature report, but I don't know because but I think in terms of our these were reported there may have been some others which were maybe much more minor than that. Okay, in terms of our report but again from the DAT is not actually indicated that you want to land the angles, also not actually because if you set yourself objective and you don't fulfill them, then you have a problem. And I must be honest that in this reporting period, there have been the first quarter, I indicated there were some serious challenges in our organization in terms of human resources. And we had no CFO at some point in time, although we had some coverage of that. Our stakeholder manager was there, I think, you know. So we had a very positive step in the industry. And these 18 that we have not achieved, and that is why we said that
nobody should be happy with further changes. We are conscious of those, and we already have put in place some processes. And these are already looked at in the intergovernmental processes where we have JECA, we have the CFO, we have the proper governance structure. In the stakeholder management, we have that as well. But still, we will still be challenging in the intervention of, for example, conducting inspection. But as I indicated, where we are challenging some of conducting inspection, we optimize our resources to really focus on important matters. And so that we ensure that the safety regulation of these entities are compliant. But yes, I'm trying our best to achieve. I think some of the areas we call lack of efficient system or we call this performance management, this is one of the areas. And I think we have that with your expenditure, supply chain management, safety risk of operator, what do we mean by that? I think it's probably the wrong way around. Sort of enforcement by the operator, and we actually measure this sort of for activities like the meter partition and cougar, what is the actual risk from that ground to the given bucket? That's what we possibly the wrong charge. The recurring of compliance of mine, as I explained in my presentation, some of these things, but if you go to page 49 of our report, there are some of these what we call non-compliance that have been highlighted. There have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 mines out of the 123. And we have to take some action in some of the enforcement. And these mines are actually even there is a question of independence of the watchdog, NNR. What I think this point is, and if you come to the conference, this international conference, in December, there are four topics, four major topics that we discuss. And one of them is regulatory independence. What are the attributes, what are the aspects, what is done internationally? Now, in terms of the independence of the regulator, yes, this country now, never mind what's happening in the rest of the world. We are established by an act of parliament, which gives us a lot of sort of power without being interfered from the outside. The regulatory decision making is actually right with board and chief executive officer. The sort of the representation on the board of 12 members, which are from other government departments, plus other 7 members, which are basically coming from other spheres, ensure that there is sort of a questioning aspect or whatever, and that there is no interference. The interference obviously could come from the executive authority, but in terms of that, the power of the executive authority do not interfere with the actual regulatory decision making process. If there is a new installation license that has to be sort of given, granted to a prospecting applicant, whether it's a PBR, ESCOM, or whatever, there is no interference by it. I think this is what it is. So in terms of the decision making process, there is no I can say that in terms of the level of the independence of this regulator compared to some other regulators of other countries, we are doing pretty well. Although it may not be optimal, but I think one needs to look at that in the future. This is actually pretty well set international standards. In terms of racial balance, I can give you the assurance that we are not getting rid of white people. I can give you that assurance. And it doesn't mean because you have white people in your organization that they are clever or more able to do the work than black people. Why that also is a so sorry to talk like that, but this is a fact. When we employ black people, whether they are Indian, colored, black, whether they are male or female, or whether they are white, there are certain requirements that we need to have in terms of qualification. And all our scientists, engineers, hold degrees, at least minimum 2 years, some of them are 4 years, many of them are masters, and some of them are PhDs. Not many, but some of them. And in some of these PhDs, they're not only white. We have a black lady that has a PhD in computer science. So I think I can give you the assurance that when we employ black people, they are not just making another. We can't afford that. And I think we are very conscious of that, that if we have two applicants, and one of them is black, we can potentially do the work, and that he basically qualified as much as the right person, we would just control the black and develop that person. That is in terms of our diplomatic resources and the whole diplomatic guidelines of policy of the government. In terms of organizational structure or gender parity, yeah, look, I think I indicated that we will work towards that, but you know, in terms of gender equality, the majority of our staff is technical, and to find women engineers, never mind if they are black or white, women, gender, women engineers, civil engineering, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, nuclear engineering, you don't find that very often. You can look at the universities in South Africa that turned out engineers, not any woman in there. Never mind the rest of them. And that applies to the sort of the scientific as well. It's not many women in that field. And that's perhaps, and this is where we get our people. That certainly we try to actually look at employing women in our organization. But the field is not there, it's quite difficult. In terms of the organizational structure, figure, the technical services are indicated most of our staff in that area. Yet, it is, we use, and we indicated that in our budget that quite a large portion of that goes into some external services, in terms of consultancy and all this. Do we have all the expertise that we need? No. I think that answer is twofold. There are some areas that we don't need in any case, full-time employees at this moment in time. And then we, like I'm just thinking on top of my head, we don't have a civil engineer. We don't build roads, we don't build bridges. They are only every so often a civil engineering issue that we have to deal with in terms of safety and all this sort of stuff, nuclear installation, and for that we identify external support. In terms of some of the licensing activities, for example, related to the PDMR, which was a new technology that we were faced with, we had no knowledge of it, but the beginning we obviously internet into some contract agreement with technical consulting specialists of other countries that were actually knowledgeable in that area. But we were trying to actually diminish reliance on contractors and using our own internal staff. And every single contract that we have to demonstrate the skill transfer from the consultant to our staff and we monitor them. But it would be inevitable that even in the future that we will not ever rely on consultants. And we also make use in some of our expertise support. We have a lot of products, we have some bilateral agreements with regulators of other countries. For example, the Cooper Nuclear Power Station is a country now in South Africa. And we have a very, very good relationship with the French regulator, where we can engage in discussion, we can engage in information sharing, they can assist us on areas of technical issues that we have. And the conference in December, the date is from the 14th to the 18th of December. It's a regulatory conference that is obviously organized by the IEA. We are hosting it on behalf of the government, which is a big tap on the back for us, acknowledging our credibility. I'm sure we will do well, and definitely we can extend the invitation to yourself. We can. The process will be that you will have to be registered on the RE, because it's an RE conference, and we can actually facilitate that for the members. If we can say the name of people that want to attend, it's for free, there's no charge, nothing. You can just there, listen, and I think it will be quite interesting to see what the international community has to say. Thank you very much. As I understand, our Minister of Energy,
I say this, there was a question that we didn't address on the northern ticket.
Oh, yeah.
What we do is we set out a 3-year strategic plan, and the north applicable are not applicable in this particular financial year. So we set 3-year goals, but when we report, we've got to report on everything that we set out as a goal on. So they're not applicable in this financial year. That's what it means. I hope that is clearly explained.
I just want to check just one aspect. The relationship between you as a organization and the radio is the most important issue.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. There is this radioactive, National Radioactive Waste Institute, has been sort of formed by an act of parliament, exactly that act was established. And it's a very similar act that, for example, NECTAR, what we have, we have a board, we have an executive officer, and they will be responsible for certain activities. And these activities will be ready to manage the operation of nuclear waste facilities. So all nuclear radioactive waste, not only nuclear, but everything, all the waste will be managed by that institute. And that means that obviously in terms of operation, they will be need to have some authorization. For example, you look at the waste repository that is at Washington, it's currently managed by NECTAR under the system authorization. And that authorization means we actually gave NECTAR after some process. And obviously, we do some inspection and all that. So that facility is regulated by NECTAR. Now, the institute will basically manage all operations of the waste, but they need to be authorized by ourselves. And they will have also all of activities in terms of research and development, in terms of options for radioactive waste management expansion, all these sort of things. And they are similar type of models in other countries, such as in Korea, France, or Germany.
I don't know what a good position is. unless they have a wife, with other people. To me, it sounds very funny. But maybe you don't enhance wedding, which is how do you win adoption? But that's the question that I think you can have a decision for an answer.
Let's tackle that right away.
Yeah,
I think first of all, the relationship between us and Nexa is not really that of cousin. Just to clarify that, we regulate them. And they typically in this industry, we compete with them for skills. So they have a bigger checkbook than us. Absolutely. So when we say there's a competition for skills, the regulator must compete with the regulated entity for the very same pool of skills. So if a person is faced between joining ESCOM and the regulator, the likelihood is that ESCOM or NEXA will beat us hands down when it comes to pay skills. Absolutely.
Okay,
thank you.
One way or the other,
very
thank you.
Welcome on board. Welcome on board. That is the reality of the
industry.
We compete. We can only regulate them constitutionally.
Sure that everything is done for the community.
conference in December. The policy statement, as I indicated, is that however there is going to be the IRP, which is the integrated resource plan, which will then give some targets on nuclear bills. I think that the minister in the budget would agree to, and that will keep in the pipeline should the release provide. I know that some said, you know, that apparently was someone going to know this, you know, there is some talk of this in some newspaper, written newspaper. But of course, we do indicate that it may be not the ledge that will ultimately find its way through Parliament. There are some areas, Captain, just in conclusion. For us as a department, we think that in the country there is the issue of skill shortage, but equally, we feel that there is skill employment. That's where we may be lacking, because we perhaps need to find strategies of harnessing the talent. The talent is there, and we just don't take the time to, you know, work with people, develop people, and so on. We become quite impatient, and really also some areas that need to be looked into as to how we are trying to, you know, make sure that we mentor people. We as a country, we may need to devise the mechanism of incentivizing mentorship so that those who produce the most number of excellent up-and-coming employees actually do get incentivized. But the last issue that I want to raise is about access to land for nuclear power plants. And this is one, I think, that requires, I think, members of the portfolio committee together with your counterparts, that nuclear power plants are going to be built next to the coal for purposes of cooling and so on. Now, that valued land is prime land in the country, and in some instances it's owned by foreign state players. So, for example, you find that the cost of building a nuclear power plant gets inflated because of the cost of buying the land. And this is something that is going to require, I guess, the intervention, I guess, beyond some political intervention and so on. We had a case here where an owner of the land next to Quebec actually came to our offices as the department and said, "I can sell you some land." This man flies all the way from London to come to our office to say that I know we have a dispute about the land next to Quebec and I've taken you to court and so on. We can talk about it. There is a way we can resolve it. Now, there are a number of sites that have been identified by the court for building nuclear power plants. And there's got to be some way found to make sure that actually, you know, we can get access to that land without having to pay 100 million for maybe 3-4 hectares and so on. But they are out now to make money. They know we need the land and stuff. But it's just something I thought
I intend to say something on your mind.
We have to redirect.
We are Yeah.